Big and Smart Show today on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast as Dr. Renee Miller joins us to talk about cognitive biases in fantasy sports. What are the mistakes that your brain is causing you to make in your drafts and when setting your weekly lineups? Which players do we need to be careful of trying to justify ourselves and talking ourselves into? And what are ways we can combat cognitive biases while also admitting that, hey, sometimes they can be a good thing? Tons of information coming up on the show. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Friday, August 2nd. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is, as it always is, but it definitely is today, a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is, look, I think we bring on a lot of smart people onto this show. But I'm going to go ahead and say with confidence, this is probably the smartest person who will ever be on our particular podcast, Renee Miller. She's a PhD. She is a professor in brain and cognitive sciences at the University of Rochester, as well as a contributor at Yahoo Fantasy, someone whose work I've been following for many, many, many years. She's also the author of Cognitive Bias in Fantasy Sports. Renee, what's going on?
Not too much, Matt. Thanks for having me on and the very generous introduction. Lots of smart people in this industry, of course.
Yes, but I think the way that you approach fantasy sports analysis is both unique and super valuable, and I think a perfect fit for Strategy Week here on the podcast. Little programming note before we get into our conversation we have here today with Renee. Like I mentioned, it's Strategy Week this week, but starting next week, it's over, okay? No more real life, no more outside time. Day drinking, that's over with. Family time, that's over with. Because the podcast, 5 days a week, okay? That's right. I'm here every day, Monday to Friday, with you all. What a dream. Each week in August, you know, just like last year, we have a central theme to all the podcasts. Like I mentioned, this week is Strategy Week. Next week, we have Rankings Week, then Position Previews, Conviction Weeks, and then we end August with Cram Week in the biggest draft week of the year. Again, today we are rolling through Strategy Week with Renee as we look to uncover how cognitive bias can impact your game as a fantasy football player and hopefully figure out some ways to combat that. So for the lay people out there, Renee, let's just get this started with kind of a general view. What is cognitive bias? Before we apply it to football and fantasy, just generally, what is cognitive bias for those of us who might be unfamiliar?
So cognitive bias is very old. You can find evidence of it in most of the species in the animal kingdom. So it's something that's been with us for a long time, which I want to point out is probably evidence that it's doing something beneficial for us. The 10,000 foot view is that cognitive biases are shortcuts to decision making. So every day, every hour, every minute, we're confronted with tons of choices and have to make decisions. Some of them really impactful and life-changing, and some of them very minor and minute. And we, most of us, I think, don't give a lot of thought to what goes into making those decisions. Another very, very, very smart person, Daniel Kahneman, kind of identified this fast thinking versus slow thinking and set up a lot of the research that has influenced how I approach decision making and understanding cognitive biases. So a bias is any kind of shortcut that forces you or causes you to weight some piece of information, some piece of the puzzle of your decision more heavily than another part. Maybe not for a legitimate or valid reason. Maybe for a legitimate and valid reason. And that's part of the reason that we're still having cognitive biases after millions of years of evolution, is sometimes they're right. Sometimes the instinctual, fast, emotional-based decision is the right one. You know, first impressions is a good example, right? There's a famous study of university professors, I'll use that since I am one, is that they ask students to rate the professor in the first 5 minutes of class, and then at the end of the semester after having been taught by that person, and the rankings are almost identical. So those are biased impressions. What does the person look like? What does their 2-minute introduction sound like? Are they going to be a good professor? Am I going to learn a lot from this person? And they're pretty spot on.
I feel like bias inherently has kind of like a negative connotation as a word. You initially hear, okay, this person's biased or, you know, what have you, and you feel like that is a bad thing. But I like this perspective that it's not necessarily something that has to be a negative. This can actually be something that does help in, like, again, I table-setted the conversation as that we're going to try to combat cognitive bias, but as you're kind of pointing out here, that's not necessarily the goal, or is it just better to understand cognitive bias and where this comes into our decision-making?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the more you can understand the basis for your decisions and be able to justify them with more than an emotional or gut reaction, the better.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know that's going to come up here when we go to the second part of our conversation. So now that we sort of understand what cognitive bias is, I'm curious, what made you want to apply this type of research to fantasy football, and how can we kind of like 10,000 foot view, how does cognitive bias come into play when we're making fantasy football decisions?
I was a fantasy player before I was interested in cognitive bias, though maybe not before I was interested in neuroscience and the brain in general. But it came up when I was teaching a class in December, I don't know, like 12 years ago or something. And the person I was teaching with was talking about cognitive biases and going through recency bias and novelty bias and self-serving bias and outcome bias and all these things. And it was in the fantasy playoff time, which is separate from my teaching career at the time. But I was thinking, wow, all of these decisions that I make every week in fantasy football might actually not be great decisions. And maybe there's some systematic mistakes that I'm making. And then I took it a step further and said, well, I'm a neuroscientist. Like, I think about the brain and how it works way more than the average fantasy football player. And if I'm making all these mistakes, other people might be too. So that's when I really decided to delve in and see which biases might be actually influencing sit start decisions, drafting decisions, add drop, trade. And that was the origin of the book that you mentioned, the ebook that I wrote, which is still relevant, although you'll laugh if you read it now with all the outdated player examples that are in it.
Talk about biases there. Right. I venture to say, Renee, that probably is my favorite part, is the player references, because anyone who listens to this podcast knows that I enjoy a good segment or a good session of guys name and dudes, like remembering old players. I was just in LA actually visiting my wife's family, and one of her cousins and I joked that we could probably stay up until 4 a.m. just going back and forth being like, remember Chris Johnson? Like, remember Jamal Lewis? Remember Jeff Garcia? You know, and just like talking about random players. So I think that might be my favorite part of the book, to be real with you. But I am curious, just because we're talking about some of these older players, because I love this type of stuff. Was there a particular way back when this, again, was sort of igniting in your brain and you're thinking about this concept and probably starting to put together the book, was there any sort of player specific situation for you that kind of lit your fire about, oh, this is cognitive bias being in my particular fantasy football decision making?
I'll give another positive example. So there's a bias that's without the negative connotation called the pseudo certainty effect. Mm-hmm. And that is basically the, when things are going good, you don't change a lot, right? Mm. If your fantasy team is in first place, you're starting the same guys every week, everything's going good, you're winning easily, you're not going to make a bunch of trades or do a bunch of ad drops unless you're really crazy. But when things aren't going well, when you're trying your hardest and, you know, players that should be exceeding aren't, and you're losing week after week after week, you get a kind of an air of desperation and you're willing to take bigger risks in order to achieve bigger rewards, right? So there's this balance between understanding your situation and making decisions based on that. And it's, I mean, most people will do what I said, or that is in line with this pseudo certainty effect. And so that was the one that I really saw myself that year. I was the 0-5 team with a fantastic draft, players I still believed in, and they were just not performing. And so I blew it up and did things that normally I'm not that comfortable with. I'm a pretty conservative player when it comes to, you know, betting, DFS, fantasy, whatever. And it worked. I went on this huge winning streak and ended up making the playoffs. I don't remember if I won the league or not, but it worked. And so I was, that was the one that kind of sticks with me most from that first year of being aware of how my brain was influencing my play.
That is super fascinating because honestly, it's something I really struggle with as a fantasy player. I tend to cling to, and you know, sometimes this can be the right thing to do. I always talk about how Adam Harstad, great writer from Football Guys, he says that in the first 4 weeks, ADP is still more predictive of like draft ADP is more predictive of future results than whatever is currently happening in the first 4 weeks of the season. Once you get to week five, then I think the new reality is kind of set in. So I tend to almost wave off, you know, slow starts or a player that I was really excited about. And again, sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't, right? I always come back to wide receivers because of what I do with reception perception. You know, I'll get a lot of people that follow my work in the first, you know, couple weeks of the season. Well, hey, this guy, you know, hasn't done anything. And he was a really, you know, big bet of yours this year. And, you know, what like that panic starts to set in. And sometimes it's just, hey, trust the talent, stay the course. But then there are other examples, like with Jahan Dotson last year is a great example, a player I really liked coming into last year. And I kept kind of, I think I held on too long to, hey, he's a good player and there's opportunity in this offense. I still think he's a good player, but it was just clear the complexion of that offense last year was just not going to work for a secondary wide receiver. They spread the ball out way too much. Sam Howell was taking all these sacks, both I think because of him and the offensive line and the way the offense was designed. Again, a lot of competing factors. So it's difficult, Renee, because I think it is so case by case. You can't just say, okay, always be patient or always be reactionary and blow it up. But that for me, I think is a good reminder because I really struggle with that. And the more I've listened to, you know, your work and especially the guys like Andy and Scott here have been hammering, like, be good in September, get off to a good start. It makes your life easier. It is a very good reminder, I think.
And I mean, it goes the other way too. When you have a player like, Puka Nacua, and it's like, is that real? Is he really going to do that every week? Is that, should we buy that? So yeah, I cover all of these kind of things in my weekly article on Yahoo, the Factor Fluke article, where we kind of try to figure out what's real in the early season.
Yes, it's something you write all throughout the season, and people should definitely make sure they check that out all throughout the year. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go through Renee's article that just went on the site today and take a look at some big picture concepts and how bias and our brains affect our fantasy decision making right after this. All right, Renee, let's get into some big picture concepts from the piece that just went live on the site today on yahoosports.com. First of all, I want to just talk about knowing both who you are as a drafter and your league mate tendencies. That was kind of the step one outline to how to, you know, again, use cognitive bias and or get through some of these things that you wrote in your piece today. I think this is a great way to start. And it's always, especially when doing any dynasty analysis, why I think it's really difficult to give advice on what player value is, because what your league mates feel is critical. I definitely just want to note that I think for some drafters, the second part's going to be easier than others, because maybe you've played in this league for 10 plus years, you know all these people, or maybe it's some random draft room in a best ball draft online. So when we're looking at that, Renee, what do you think are the best steps that people can take to sort of both know who you are as a drafter and know what your league mates and how they operate?
In a timed, fast draft with strangers, I think it is a waste of your precious time to try to figure out exactly what other people are doing. If you can have a general sense of who needs what and where, and that's great. But more important to know you and your plan and what kind of draft you're comfortable with. You know, we have these kind of archetypal draft strategy personas that we tend to identify with or not. Maybe some people like to try a different thing every year, or maybe it's reactionary to what they tried last year, or you know, what people are really talking up. I think hero running back is probably the most popular strategy of 23-24, coming off the heels of zero running back and late round quarterback and all these that we know. And some can work, you know, you can be anchor running back and late round quarterback, of course. But knowing what your plan is pretty essential to going into the draft logically. Having some idea of what you want to happen, and then staying flexible. to if that doesn't happen. I mean, if you get into a draft room with people you know or don't know, and everybody's trying to exert the same strategy, it's not going to work well for everyone. And at that point, you're losing value if you stick with it. Example, you know, if you want to go zero running back, but everyone else is going zero running back, that means 12 wide receivers or 10 wide receivers are going to be off the board in the first round and maybe another 8 in the second round. You're silly to take the wide receiver 20 when the running back 5 is still available. You have to adapt, right? Know what your ideal blueprint draft looks like, and then be aware if that's no longer possible and figure out what's the best pivot.
Yeah. Again, this is something I struggle with all the time because I know that my, this is great. I love how we're just revealing things that I struggle with as a fantasy drafter throughout this show. That's why this is important, because I think a lot of people are going to feel the same way. I almost always, you know, I just wrote about this with Scott, a little draft debate we did for the site yesterday. I almost always go into drafts, really this year and probably the last like 2 or 3 years, looking to execute that anchor running back strategy where I'd like to come away from drafts in the first 4 rounds with 3 receivers who I just feel very good about. You know, the target projection is good. The talent level is good. The ecosystem is one where I think we can grow some real fruit. I always want to come away in the first 4 rounds with those players. I'd also like to not, I've done zero running back in the past. These days, I think there are just so few of these truly high-end running backs. And even when an injury happens and, you know, when you lean into injury, you lean into chaos, you get that waiver wire running back, even sometimes they don't necessarily hit to the same degree, Kyren Williams excluded, as these true bell cow backs. So I do want to come away with one of those players too. But if you don't time that right, you can often be, I think, left holding the bag, you know, or you're still looking for that high end running back one. And, you know, you end up maybe with somebody like Travis Etienne, who I think fits into this bucket, but I don't feel as comfortable if you're looking at like where my running back tiers and everything like that. So is there anything that like whether it's using tiers, whether it's using rankings, is there any way we can sort of like have a practical approach to, hey, here's how you can be very flexible, even if you have sort of these strict strategy notes going into a draft?
Yeah, I like using tiers. To me, that's the obvious. If I have to drop down a tier to continue taking wide receivers when there are higher tier running backs or even tight ends available, then do it. Yeah. There are always a shocking number of wide receivers I like in round 12.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a bargain shopper. There are always more wide receivers I like later in the draft than running backs. So if I'm not getting one of those perfect ticks all the boxes receivers in rounds 1 through 3 or 4, then I'm not going to settle. I'm very much avoiding the middle tier of wide receivers.
Same. Just yeah. Like I said, totally. I think there are just with all of those players, like I get into my fourth tier of receivers and I can start to pick nits on all of these players, whether it's target competition, whether it's they're at this kind of a curious age apex where we have to be a little bit concerned, or the quarterback pairing. Of course, I look at my fourth tier of running backs. My man, I can pick a lot of nits on a lot of these players. So that's just naturally how drafts flow. But certainly my confidence level in wide receiver tier 3, I think, you know, in the which I would say is Mike Evans, Jalen Waddle, you know, Chris Olave, I think, is in this tier. Drake London, I think, is in this tier. I certainly feel better about some of those guys from a ceiling perspective, even if they're a bit more volatile than maybe some of the running backs there. So, yeah, I think using tiers is a great way to sort of try to combat these biases and sort of knowing who you are. And then again, yeah, knowing your league mates is always super and critical. So let me dive into the next point here, which is one of my favorite parts of your piece. Like I said, I really want to dive into this one. Couple of quotes here from you on this. One, two of the things that make the preseason and opening week so much fun can actually impair our ability to make our best draft day decisions. This is perfect because we just had the Hall of Fame game last night. Not that there was a lot of fantasy relevant players in the Hall of Fame game, but we're kicking off preseason here officially. So I think this is super important. One, is information bias. The second sort of preseason or early season emotion can overtake logic. Let's talk about information bias. Renee, can you explain what that is to people? Because I thought this was, again, some of the most practical and really applicable. You know, we can really use this as training camps and preseason sort of start to kick off here.
Yeah. So information bias was one that always stuck with me because as a scientist, collecting data, gathering information is my job, right? It is what I believe in, scientific method, all of that. Information is good. Data is good. The more, the merrier. And in some science applications, that is very true, but not in all decisions. So their tenet of information bias says the more information we have, the more pieces of information that we have that support a decision, increase our confidence in that decision, but don't necessarily increase the accuracy of that decision. So if you really kind of are leaning toward a player, maybe on your favorite team, maybe just somebody that's getting a lot of hype, you can find a lot of statistics and you can dig very deep and find out, you know, how many steps they take before they catch the ball in the rain in December, and you know, come up with a reason why this is a good player to draft. And a lot of people will do that to justify their decisions, but we see it a lot in justifying rankings. Fantasy football is a game of statistics. It's a game of data. It's a game of luck. We can talk,
sure,
you know, till next week about draft strategies, but luck is going to factor into, you know, how well your plan actually works out. Using shallow data, maybe shallow data is a good way to represent it, is not as effective as using deep data. It's only going to make you more secure in your conviction of, you know, wide receiver A over wide receiver B, when really you could look at two or three kind of key pieces of information. How many points does the team score? That's important to me. It's really basic. Targets, air yards, points per route run, usage statistics, I think, are the most important.
Well, I just love the idea of information overload, right? And you're consistently searching. You're searching out bits of confirmation, right, for yourself, and to continue to add evidence when your initial assertion, like, if you're not, you should already be confident enough that you don't need to continue to pile on more things. At the same time, yeah, of course, like, it's fun, right? I'm gonna use a player that I really like to sort of talk about this, and we'll get into some real player specific examples at the third part of the show. But I just want to throw this one out here to you. I really like Dontayvion Wicks, right? Big fan of the player. Think he's good. Okay, I like, when I watch him, when I chart him on film, I think he is a good route runner. I think he exceeded any expectation that you'd have for a day three receiver as a rookie in a crowded room on a young and growing offense. Okay, that's already the statement. I think that his film backs it up. I think certain advanced metrics back that up. But he is definitely a player that gamers, if you want to sort of try to find the next big thing, and look, before I continue on the negative, I will go back to your point of, hey, look, this is fun, okay? If you take Dontayvion Wicks in the 12th, 13th round of your draft and he does nothing for you, who cares? It truly does not matter. It does not make or break your team. Nobody's telling you to take him in the 5th round, okay? If you take him in the 5th round, we got to have a little conversation about all that. But yeah, you want to try to be the next smart person in your league, you take him in the 13th round, doesn't work out, cut him, doesn't matter, who cares? But back to the point here, which is, I think he is definitely a player that you can, there's some risk of continuing to try to justify that initial hype to yourself, because I really like him. I think basically anybody that seems to watch him on film likes him. There are a lot of advanced metrics that show, hey, this guy's a pretty good player. At the same time, Renee, like, don't we also have to be grounded in the reality of, this is a crowded room? He is a day three draft pick. There are other guys that maybe the coaching staff wants to give a chance to. There are a lot of other good players here. So I think we just have to be careful of continuing to search out information like, oh, look at this next advanced stat that really shows you this guy's a good player. We already know he's a good player. But then, like, we need more information beyond that before we take the next step.
Yeah, nothing ruins fantasy more than reality, right?
Great. That's the tagline.
And also, I mean, I think the Green Bay wide receiver room is the testing ground for this year's fantasy football experts, fans, everybody. You know, getting that guy right is going to be the second accolade after winning your league. Is I'm putting my
got,
money.
I
on
got
Dobbs.
The right Green Bay. Yeah,
you got
right.
Wicks, I got Dobbs.
But that's a great point, and I think that also leads you to almost batten down the hatches even more when it's not necessary and become more and more overconfident in something that, you know, you say like luck is the real factor here. If you don't want to say luck and you want to remain like grounded in, oh no, this is a skill game. This is a skill game that we really, that it is both. Yeah, it can be both. But if you want to remain grounded in the skill game part of it, the whether you want to call it luck or not, there are so many things that you as the fantasy player do not have control over. Okay, like, and you can put in all of this research and you can watch all the film and look at all the stats. And the reality is you have no control over who gets on the field and where the football goes. You can be good at predicting it, but you literally do not control that. So I don't know if that's just a way of being zen and letting things go. But that is, I think, a good way to approach this game.
Yeah, and you can find it every week in fantasy analysis. They should be doing this. This team should be doing this. They should be getting this player the ball more often, and they just might not. That's the reality.
Right.
Ruining
exactly.
the fantasy dream. Yeah. And I think that one more thing to add there, when you do dig in and you are committed to your guy, the more time you spend, the more research you do, the more invested in a player you are, the harder it is to let go. And that also has a name. That's called the endowment effect. It's like when you invest in something, whether it's a home, a car, an article of clothing, or a fantasy asset, you think it's worth more than other people do. So it can really complicate the trade market and your willingness to just drop a player. Especially true in auction leagues. I don't play in any auction leagues currently, but I have in the past. And when you've actually, you know, spent $9 on a player, it's really hard to just drop them, even if they are doing nothing for your fantasy roster.
My God, do I feel that about not just football, but in my real life, right? I ask my wife about my weird value on.
Wives always have a lot to say about this. Yes. Why do you all collect all these things that you don't need or use or want?
Yes. Why do you have? Well, that's why I have my own office. That's why I can have the star in our
so
old house.
Mine.
In our old house, we didn't have room for the original Star Wars movie posters, except in the hallway down to the garage. Here, got my own office for all my weird endowment effect items.
Yeah.
But it certainly comes into play. And again, I think with Dynasty, this is so critical, because again, I'll point the spotlight on myself here. You know, a guy like Rashad Bateman, right? I think Bateman was a good prospect coming into the league, and I think he's run into just a lot of bad injury luck. I'm still, you know, we're here, this is his fourth year in the league. I still feel a lot of that. Like if I have Rashad Bateman in Dynasty, he's more valuable to me than anybody else. So I'm not stupid enough to go out on the trade market and be like, hey, anybody want to lightly use Rashad Bateman? No, by the way, I'm the one that wants to lightly use Rashad, maybe heavily use Rashad Bateman. So I definitely feel that. And I think that can be, I can certainly go on the, you know, just a couple episodes ago with Jory Epstein. I'm like, Jory, look at all these things John Harbaugh has said about Rashad Bateman. And I think it's, as Jory mentioned, it's important to stay grounded in the actual reality of what the team looks like. So again, very similar situation with Wicks, that look, if you draft Rashad Bateman with the final pick in your fantasy round, it doesn't work out. Who cares? Doesn't matter. But again, it's just trying to guard yourself from the endowment effect and information bias is super critical. I do want to hit on the preseason or early season emotion kind of can overtake logic idea, Renee, because we did touch on it a little bit with, like I said, with Adam Harstead, the first 4 weeks can be a little bit of a trap. So what are some of the ways that we can combat that, and how do we go about that? Because it is so difficult when the excitement of week one hits and all, we're certainly overloaded with a lot of new information.
This comes into the part of kind of knowing about how the brain works. I teach a class in neurochemistry. It comes down to the signals that individual cells in your brain are sending to each other that determine whether we're using that sort of slow, logical, rational thinking or the fast, emotional, instinctual thinking. And excitement and joy can lead to the release of chemicals in our brains like dopamine and norepinephrine that do a couple things. They make us feel good. They give us a lot of energy. They enhance memory formation, so they can help us consolidate ideas and information that we're taking in during this time, which can give these early season, preseason events a lot more importance, so that when, you know, when that player's name comes up during our draft, those memories are activated, those signals are replicated kind of as we recall, and that drives us toward draft or don't draft, right? It could be a negative memory. It could be like, oh my gosh, that guy had four drops in the last preseason game. And even if he's Justin Jefferson, we're going to be like, whoa.
Ja'Marr Chase 2021.
Pump the brakes, right? So those chemicals can actually, it just, our brains being in that excited, happy, joyful, football is back kind of state can force us to create these connections between outcome and sure. player. Like we think we know, right, at that time. So we're not relying on a whole history of player knowledge, career numbers. We're really just so tied into that most recent performance that happened when we were in this vulnerable state of memory formation. So again, doesn't have to be bad, right? Sometimes what happens in the last preseason game is a perfect indicator of what's going to happen in the regular season. And so that can work to your advantage.
Yeah, no, I love this part of the piece too, where you, again, as you've said several times in the podcast, a cognitive bias doesn't inherently have to be a bad thing or a negative kind of connotation of it, but sort of ask yourself to justify those conclusions to yourself. And again, I think it comes back to, what do you want to be true? Because we want to be right about certain things. And I'm just gonna dump on myself all podcasts. That's fine. Why else do you have a podcast if not to just, you know, get yourself loathing out? I'll go back to Damian Pierce last year, where Dwayne McFarlane from Fantasy Life did a really good thread recently looking back at his conclusions from preseason usage last year and sort of what bore out to be true and what was sort of like not a great indicator. And a lot of what he found there was that the usage notes from preseason can be good predictors of early season usage, but the player's got to be good enough or the role has to make sense for that player to continue to hold that role. And Damian Pierce was a great example last year where one of the reasons that I really ended up drafting him more than I should have was, one, because we want to find that hit in the running back dead zone. We want to be able to look at this area of drafts and say, okay, this guy is going to come out of the muck and the mire there. So while everybody else is wasting their time with, you know, Alexander Mattison or whatever, I'm going to go here with Damian Pierce because I'm going to be right. You know, I'm going to be able to find that thing that other people are overlooking. And that was, I wanted to find that guy, and Pierce ended up being the player that I targeted there because a lot of, you know, I thought he had a good rookie season. You know, I thought the Texans offense could be, I didn't think they'd be as good as they were, but I thought they were being a little bit underrated because I really liked Stroud and Nico Collins and Tank Dell and some of these guys. So it was like, okay, if the starting running back from this team can hold this job and he had a good rookie season, I think he could end up being a value pick. And then, Renee, the preseason happens where he's out there basically for all the snaps at the starters and all that stuff. To me, it was just, okay, that was what I wanted to see. Makes me feel better about my conclusions. Yeah. But instead of actually sitting there and justifying to my, like if I'd asked myself, hey, are they just out there seeing if he can do that because they're testing things out, because this is practice, this is preseason. It's not the stakes aren't real yet. I think if I had asked myself those questions, maybe I could have come to a better conclusion than I did.
Yeah, that's the worst thing that I have too. I think I make really good plans. I think I have really good ideas and I make good decisions for the most part. But when things don't line up with my plan, with my narrative, that's the hardest thing for me to overcome in fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, let's take one quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to go through some specific player and team situations where we can use all of this great knowledge and put it into some actual practice here. All right, Renee, let's talk through some specific player team examples where cognitive bias can, you know, sort of be at play here. And let's start with some retooled teams. I want to specifically talk about new quarterbacks. You threw out, you know, Justin Jefferson with maybe a worse quarterback, McLaurin or Pickens with maybe a better quarterback. I love this, Renee, because I think I have definitely used, you know, this concept to sort of, I point myself in the wrong directions with this sometimes, where I'll use Allen Robinson. Great example with the Bears. It's like, okay, he had a lot of bad quarterback plays, and then it's like, okay, Nick Foles is probably the best quarterback he's ever played with. Well, he's still Nick Foles. Andy Dalton's probably the best quarterback. You know, like you can continue to do that. So how can cognitive bias kind of come into play when we're looking at some of these new receivers teamed up with a new quarterback and whether they are better or worse?
So this is where, I mean, I think this narrative also comes in that we've been kind of touching on also comes into play here is what do we think is going to happen? What do we want to happen? You know, once we sort of make a commitment, like you're a Jefferson person regardless, so you want it to work out and you can spin it that way. But also, this is individual differences too. So biases don't show up the same way for all people. So when I see a player on a new team, I might be super optimistic. This is going to give, we're doing the new quarterback. So McLaurin with new quarterback or Pickens with better quarterback. I think optimism, right, is at play. If we're really high on these rookie quarterbacks and where they're being drafted, as we are, then their primary receivers who we've believed in their talent for, in some cases, many years, in some cases, just a couple years, then I think that's, you know, a bump for them. But I'm a naturally optimistic person. Somebody else could come in and be pessimistic and say, these are brand new systems with new coaches, new offensive coordinators, new quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks. It's going to be a lot harder for everything to go right in that offense than it is for some things to go wrong. And it's probably going to be a rockier road because these teams are all new to all retooled, new offenses. It takes a long time to learn a new offense, you know, from the offensive line on down through everybody else, new routes, new timings, new everything. I think it can go either way. And this is, again, know yourself. And are you being, probably most of us are leaning too far in either direction. We strongly believe in the new situation. We strongly disbelieve in the new situation. And the reality is it's somewhere in the middle. So for players like that, I try to really emphasize the range of possible outcomes and draft accordingly. Like if you only recognize the ceiling and not the floor, you're not helping yourself. So I want to take a player like that in a later round. Personally, Justin Jefferson isn't my round one wide receiver target. Like if I'm the 12th pick and he's still there, I'll take him. But he's not my first choice because of that quarterback uncertainty. And I know he's the player that can make do with anything, but I think there are other wide receivers in that round that won't have to overcome that obstacle.
100%. Yeah, I still am okay with Justin Jefferson in the first round, but a lot of it, well, he is at the back of that tier for me. Like he is the best receiver in football. That part of it, I think, does matter a lot. The fact to me, have you seen him succeed with, I mean, freaking Nick Mullins of all people last year? But again, that is sort of building evidence of what the positivity of it. And it's so great to point out, like, you're an optimistic person, and I'm generally an optimistic person. So I can probably sit here and make a case for why almost any quarterback can make it work with certain, like a receiver like Justin Jefferson. I've done that on this podcast with Sam Darnold. He'll throw the ball to number 18. He'll lock in on number 18, and just like Nick Mullins did last year, and he'll have that tunnel vision. Well, I mean, maybe. I don't know that for a fact. Like, you have to account for that risk in there somewhere. I want to, like, McLaurin and Pickens are interesting because, let me tell you what, Renee, as a longtime Terry McLaurin guy, the first thing I think with Terry McLaurin is I want him to have that season that from a statistical perspective that I think his talent warrants. Right there in screaming red letters is I like talk about something I need to investigate with myself. Anything that comes out of my mouth after that, like I think I've already tinted it with bias, like what I want to happen and something, again, I need to investigate where I want it to happen. This is a new situation. It's more likely to happen again, maybe. But you're so right to point out new offensive coordinator, new quarterback who's a rookie, an offensive line that's questionable. We just don't know. There's a lot of risk there. So I might still end up liking Terry McLaurin this year. But again, it's important to investigate everything that comes after that. I want it to happen. With Pickens, like I think there's a very optimistic thing to like there's definitely a path for optimism here because you can sit here and say, well, he's got a quarterback upgrade. I think there's almost no question about that because that's just how bad Kenny Pickett was. But we're still talking about two guys in Russell Wilson and Justin Fields whose teams were more than happy to send them out the door. You know, in Russell Wilson, his team was so happy to send him out of the door. They're like taking $80 million in dead cap. So I can sit here and tell you that, oh yeah, Russell Wilson, with the way he likes to throw the ball, go routes, working down the sideline, that overlaps with Pickens very well. But again, coming back to just the reality of the situation, which is this is a quarterback that is in decline, whose team was more than happy to say goodbye. So I think all of those things are important, again, to just like investigate yourself when you're trying to make these claims.
The more back and forth you do with yourself, the lower the, you know, the deeper in the draft that player should fall. Let somebody else make the mistake is a guiding philosophy in my draft. If there's players that I in some worlds I'm a fantasy expert, and there are a ton of players that I don't feel confident planting a flag in the ground for either way. I just don't know. And I avoid that uncertainty. You know, if there's somebody that I just don't feel great about, I will let somebody else make that mistake.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about like we're trying to follow that desired narrative around a player versus that's why range of possible outcomes is something I talk about all the time. And like I'm just looking at my fourth tier of receivers where these two guys that we're talking about, George Pickens and Terry McLaurin, sort of fall in that fourth tier for me. I can sit here and do the range of outcomes on so many players in that range. It's just a very, very wide range. So look, at the end of the day, you're ultimately trying to trust yourself. Like, what do you think is going to happen and being confident in those decisions? But just how much of a stretch, like how many ifs do you have to say when you're making these cases, I think is super important. I want to talk about novelty bias here, Renee, specifically as you mentioned, overdrafting rookies and taking on too much risk and reward. Rookies have been, I mean, look, no doubt about it, league winners the last 2-3 years in fantasy. But how do we combat trying to take on too much risk reward, where, as you point out, especially this time of year, rookies are often over talked about?
Right. So they're getting a lot of media attention, a lot of hype, and that drives their prices up. And they don't all work out, right? They don't all work out in year one. They don't all work out ever.
ever.
But the draw there is some of what we've also been talking about is that we make bad calls and we get attached to those narratives and we think we've done a great job and we get burned, right? If you kept starting Damian Pierce, you were not winning. And so we get burned and then we see this whole fresh new pool of talent that's getting a lot of hype that we're excited about, that maybe we're optimistic about, and we haven't been hurt by them. Right. No, rookies have never hurt us.
Great point.
And that's attractive. Right. So that's kind of the draw of novelty bias. It's all possibility. It's really hard to see the downside with a rookie or even a year two player who happened to have a spectacularly good year one. They don't all follow it up. There has to be a balance. You have to anchor your fantasy roster with some, you know, stability, with some level of consistency, the Deontay Johnson role, right? You need somebody that's going to play a lot of games and catch a lot of passes or have a lot of opportunities.
Even if it's boring, even if it's boring, low production.
Yeah. It's okay to be boring.
I talk about this all the time, Renee, that I think you got to try to make your roster make sense together. If you're taking nothing but rookies and second year players or a lot of just volatile, like wide range of outcome receivers and running backs, you're definitely, maybe you're going to be first. You could very much also be last, you know, and I think that is critical to talk about this time of year, because I love the I think probably my favorite point of the podcast so far is that idea of why do people gravitate to rookies and second year players? Because they've never burnt us before. You know, I'm pretty open to players that have, you know, burnt people in the past or burned me in the past, because just the way I approach fantasy and football analysis is that production is so inherently tied to outside variables with individual players. So if we know, or we have some degree of confidence that the player is good and something about the situation has changed, and this doesn't always work out. I've offered plenty of examples as to when this does not work out so far in this podcast, but it's okay to kind of go back to the hot, like, I know the stove was hot last time. I'm going to try to touch it one more time. Sometimes you get burnt again. Sometimes it's been a few hours and the stove is not hot anymore. And for whatever reason, if you want to touch that thing, you can go ahead and do it. So trying to find, I think that's maybe an important kind of thing to say here, is figuring out which biases you are most prone and like biggest mistakes and stuff like that, I think is super critical when we're looking at drafts coming up here.
Your example with the stove is good, but it's also, a kind of a form of bias in its own, because you still want to be right. It's really, want to be right about that player. So you're going to give them a second chance and maybe things have changed, but at the core of it, I think it's still an ego move. And biases, I should have maybe said this in the 10,000 foot view, they're all about ego. I think cognitive biases exist primarily to like make us feel good about ourselves. And we haven't talked about a lot of the ones that really fall into that category. Outcome bias, you can blame other people for things that go wrong and take credit for things that go right. Self-serving. We touched a little bit on confirmation bias. This is, you know, we want to find information that supports our pre-existing beliefs. A lot of biases are there to make us feel good about ourselves. And feeling good about yourself is a evolutionarily important thing. You're more likely to succeed if you believe in yourself. And
that makes a ton of sense. Okay, Renee, just last thing here before we close it out. Any final parting words from you to the people on, it can be high level theoretical, it can be specific player that you're kind of has got your radar up on any sort of cognitive bias around that particular player example. Final parting shot from you here on one of these.
Again, the most important thing is to know yourself and to question yourself and ask whether you're making a decision for the right reasons or for potentially biased reasons. And then know that that's not always a bad thing. And it's okay to make biased decisions. Just be prepared to move on from them, maybe more than you and I are. Maybe we can get our audience to to be a little smarter than us.
That's a big reason why I wanted to dump on myself so much on this podcast was to show you, hey, look, we can say these things, Renee, but we are not, just because, I mean, even you, like I said, I introduced the smartest person that's ever been on the podcast. But nobody is perfect when it comes to these things. Like it's inherently human nature to make these mistakes and to maybe make them multiple times. But hey, as I always say with fantasy, ambiguous situations and the unknown can be where the profit lies. So, look, we make a lot of mistakes to occasionally get things right. And outcome bias will have us be like, yeah, that was all me. That was all me. Renee, really appreciate your time today. This was fantastic. If people didn't learn something from this podcast, I would be, if they didn't learn like five things from this podcast, I'd be absolutely stunned. Tell the people what you have working on right now, whether it's with Yahoo, elsewhere, everything they can check out.
So you mentioned my draft strategy piece is available today on Yahoo. I will be doing the Factor Fluke column every week during the regular season. I have a couple of pre-draft pieces coming out this month at The Athletic. I just did a mock draft using all the different draft archetype strategies to see kind of how that might play out and what your team might look like if you are the person with novelty bias that only wants to draft rookies, or maybe you're a elite tight end guy. What might your roster look like if you kind of followed your strategy as closely as you could, given your draft position? So that should be out maybe next week.
Boom. We'd love to see it. Thank you so much, Renee. Really appreciate your time. This has been great. For the people out there, do us a favor. Like, subscribe, rate and review the podcast, all the things. We would really, really appreciate it, especially after what I think was a great strategy week here on the show. You can also send us an email, by the way, if you want to ask a question to the show, fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Written emails, they're nice, but voice memos and video notes are even better. Get your beautiful face on the pod. I mean, for God's sakes. Let me tell you what, I'm not biased when I say you people out there are beautiful and you should get your face on the podcast. Again, thank you to Dr. Renee Miller. Really appreciate it. This was a fantastic episode. You all out there, buckle up though. Monday, like I said, 5 days a week. 5 days a week as August really gets rolling here. Dalton Del Don is going to kick things off with another Mock Draft Monday next week. Enjoy the weekend. See y'all next week. Until then, we're out.